today is how you felt. And my message to you today in the few minutes that I've got to share with you is guarding the deposit in the first century and in the 21st century. And it's all about meeting people where they are and leaving them with a feeling that they want to meet you again. And a challenge I want to put to you right now is, when you walk away from anybody that you have spoken to, do they ever wonder in their mind if they have just spoken to Jesus Christ? Because we are Jesus Christ to the nations. We are his physical presence among the people. And so how people feel about us in our approach to showing them the things of God is so important as to whether they want to have contact with us again or whether they want to go somewhere else. Duncan mentioned the fact that a lot of the work has been done in countries where, for want of a better term, they're unchurched. And there are billions of people in this world that are unchurched. There are 2 billion people in this world who cannot read or write. So all the literature that we put out is fantastic, but how do we reach those people that can't read or write? Well, one of the ways that we can do it is in song, and there's many other ways that we can do it, and some of those I'll share with you in just a moment in my brief talk. But one of the songs I want to share with you is one that Nikki and I love singing at Pine Rivers Worship Centre, and it's called To the River by John Dawkson, and you can sing along with this if you know it. If you don't, you'll pick it up by the time we've finished.
Thanks, John.
Can we have that right up, please, Steve? Louder.
To the river I am going, bringing sins I cannot bear.
Thank you.
Songs that we sing that haven't been composed by our community is that there are a lot of people out there who are longing for to see Jesus just the same as we are. Duncan made a very good point in his introduction, and he said that it's not about us converting Catholics to Christadelphians or Jehovah's Witnesses and changing their thoughts on the devil. It's about bringing people to meet Jesus. And so we've been given the commission of looking after what it is that God has given us, a very precious gift. Some of us like to think of that gift in terms of doctrinal dot points. But you know, the greatest gift that we've been given is something which can be described in five letters. Paul said to Timothy, he said, "I want you to guard the deposit." 1 Timothy 6, verse 20 or 21. It doesn't say that in the Authorised Version, but what he was saying to Timothy was, that which I have given to you, I want you to look after. I want you to entrust it. And that reminds me of the verse back in Genesis 3, when Adam and Eve were put out of the garden and the cherubim were put there at the gate to keep the way of the tree of life. Now, some think that keeping is to keep it from being polluted, to keep it closed up, to keep it pure. And a lot of our theological thinking has been that we've been given something precious that we have to keep pure. And that's exactly what Israel did. And just a point, Duncan, if I could just throw this in the ring, we can discuss it later. There was nothing wrong with David numbering Israel. It's just that he left the Gentiles out. When Solomon numbered Israel, the next generation, he included the Gentiles, and that was all good. But David's problem was he left the Gentiles out. Our commission is to go to the Gentiles. That's what we've been told to do. That is our job. That's our job description. To go to the Gentiles and to share with them something that they have never, ever experienced and can't experience from a human point of view. And that is the principle of five letters, grace. And when Paul said to Timothy, "I want you to guard the deposit," he didn't mean, "I want you to lock it up and sit on it like the man in the talent parable and the man in the pound parable." Remember in those two parables you had different men who were industrious in their activity and multiplied that which the Lord had given them. But in each of those parables there was one man who dug a hole, took the sweat cloth off of his head because he was never going to raise a sweat over this anyway, wrapped his Lord's gift up, buried his Lord's assets and sat on it. And I think as a community, that's something that we have done very well in the past. And I'd like to think that we've turned the corner, that we are now moving in the right direction, and that God is actually blessing what we're doing. Like the men in those parables who were industrious and increased their Lord's gift twofold, fivefold and tenfold. Now, just my reference back to Genesis 3, the cherubim there were to keep the way open back to the tree of life. And that was the way of grace. It has always been grace. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. It was through grace that he was saved. Abraham and Sarai had the fifth letter of the Hebrew alphabet added to their names because they had embraced the principle of grace. And how is the best thing to preserve grace? What is the best thing that we can do to preserve grace? Anybody got any ideas? Show grace. You preserve it by sharing it. And this is the burden of my message this morning, this afternoon. Keeping the deposit in the first century is exactly the same as guarding it in the 21st century. You do it by sharing it. You include as many people as you possibly can. John Aldersley is going to be speaking a little later, and he has given me a bit of a sneak preview of something they're doing in New Zealand, a little tract that they put together entitled, Are We There Yet? Great little thinky thing that you can just keep in your pocket. And if you're talking to somebody and want to, you know, give them something to think about, hand it to them. There are so many ways that we can show grace. One of the ways that we find is very successful and has worked for us at Pine Rivers Worship Centre in Brisbane is to have community meals. Put on a meal. Advertise it. Get your friends to bring their friends. There's nothing like a good barbecue or a good hot dinner or something like that where people can come and to sit and to share. You don't have to have a full-on church service, but you can talk about the things of God as the Spirit moves amongst the people. You can have a theme for the night or the day or whatever it is that you've organised. We did one a while back. Nikki and I live in a caravan on a vacant block of land. We don't have a house for people to come to share. But we did have a big marquee. And so we invited everybody to come to the farm for church on the farm. And we had families turned up we'd never ever seen before who came to have an experience with the farm animals, because we've got horses and goats and I won't go through the zoo we've got, but we've got a whole heap of them. And the kids just loved petting those animals, and everybody remembered that day and just loved what they experienced. So the burden of my short talk, and it was set to finish at 2:15, is this, that we are to preserve that which God has given us by sharing it. I just want to tell you a quick little story. A man this week was doing his Christmas shopping up in Brisbane. He was shopping on the other side of town from where he lives, and at a whim, he went into the newsagents and bought a lotto ticket. He happened to win $40 million. The third largest single winning in Australian history, and a lotto win. He had one chance in 43 million of getting the numbers right. What we have been given is far greater than a $40 million lotto prize. Every single one of us has this gift, which if the Pacific Ocean were all gold, would not be sufficient money to buy that gift, would it? So what? Just coming back to that man, what should that man do with his $40 million? Well, there's a number of things he can do. He could blow it pretty quickly on casinos and some wild living. And they say that people that win lotto in no time flat are back to where they were within 12 to 18 months. Most of their money is gone. So it doesn't do them any good. He could be wise and he could invest it. If he just simply put his money to usury, like Jesus said in the parable, he would be earning $3,287 a day. And if you pull your belt in a little bit, you can live on that. And he wouldn't have to do anything else but just simply live on that and compound the interest over the rest of his life. Or he could share it. And I'm sure there are plenty of people who would like to know his name and address and claim some connection with him, that they can put out their hand and say, look, I've got a mortgage to pay, a house to pay off, you know, can you help me? I'm your long-lost cousin from, that twisted part of the family tree. Okay? So in real life, we're faced with dilemmas of what to do when we're given or when we come across or you know, if something falls into our lap which is worth an inordinate amount of money. But friends, we have been given something. We have been entrusted with something that we didn't have to work for. We didn't have to guess the doctrinal derivatives to get it right. We didn't have to guess the numbers to have it fall in our lap. We have been given it what to do. To keep it, to do what Israel did. Israel was given this great gift, put in the belly button of the earth. Every trade route was passing through Israel, a perfect position for the nations to learn about God. But no, what did they do? They turned around, they were insular, they said, we've got it, and the nations can't have it. They didn't say that, but that's exactly what they did. So God took Israel and he took them over to Babylon. He said, while you're here, guys, I want you to pray for the peace of... what? No. He said, I want you to pray for the peace of Babylon. Why? Because they were living in Babylon. And he wanted them to tell the Babylonians about the good news of his grace. And many did. And we know that many stayed on after the captivity came back. There were still people who lived on and lived in the knowledge of God's grace. And when Jesus was born and they followed the star, and however the story goes, those men came from that area where Daniel and Nehemiah and Ezekiel had left a legacy of God's grace. And so Israel, or some of Israel, did learn in part what they were supposed to do. The greatest force for good in any community is the art of networking. You all know between 1 and 200 people by name, by face. How many of those could you invite here to a communal meal on a Saturday night? How many? If you only got two, and everyone in this room got two, there aren't enough seats in this hall to accommodate them. So there's the challenge. In guarding the deposit in the first century, they did it by sharing Jesus over meals. You know, the Bible has been described as the most eatingest book that has ever been written. It starts off with fruit in a garden, and it ends with a marriage feast of the Lamb. And every significant point of history in the Bible's record is marked with food. Abraham went and got food. David had feasts. Pharaoh had a feast. When we come here on Sunday morning to remember Jesus, we're actually remembering the remnants of a Passover meal. It's a feast. And so Christianity took over the world in 30 short years for three reasons, two of them intimately connected. One was they did it over food. They shared the Lord Jesus Christ over meals. They had people come and they had meals, and of course in those days there was no social welfare, so I suppose it was quite appealing and quite a good way to reach the poor, the disenfranchised, and those who were without hope and without means. Two other things that happened, though, that were absolutely remarkable. Jesus' gospel empowered women like no other message had ever empowered anybody before his time. And women are the greatest networkers that God ever made. So put those two factors together, women and networking and meals, and that's the reason why the gospel flourished like it did in the first 2 to 3 centuries. Here's the challenge. In guarding the deposit in the 21st century, why don't we do the same thing? Why don't we take courage and be encouraged to get together and to have meals and to invite people to talk about Jesus in a non-threatening way, so that when they leave, they may say, we've just had a taste of Jesus and we want more. I'm going to ask Nikki to come up now and to introduce the next song which we're going to have before John comes up.
I haven't got as loud a voice as him, so I'm going to be a bit quiet. I'll take the microphone.
Sometimes she doesn't.
This song has actually become one of our signature songs at Pine Rivers. The story behind the song was written by Robin Mark, which probably a lot of you are familiar with Robin Mark's music. It's called Lost and Found. And he was inspired to write it, which I believe he only writes songs when he's actually inspired by a particular incident that happens. A young guy called David is one of the members of an 18 to 25 years old men's small groups in his Belfast church that for a few years he co-led with Paul Reed, our pastor. We usually begin our nights together with some discussion and sharing those things which God has impressed on our hearts the week preceding our coming together. David, generally one of the quieter members of the group, shared one evening that as he walked to the host's home on that particular wet, dark and stormy night, this is in Belfast, of course, where it was pretty drab, he noticed the reflections of steel of streetlights and houses on the soaked footpath as he made his way to the meeting. The reflection at his feet shimmered and sparkled in the rain, and in a sense made the ordinary mundane and unnoticed something beautiful, striking and attractive. Belfast's narrow and tightly packed streetscape of old terrace houses would seldom be regarded as something to wonder at under normal circumstances, but in the rain, the lustre of the light reflections added a temporary beauty to an otherwise fairly dull scene. His point, well made, was that it was only in a storm that some of the beauty and splendour of what might seem ordinary in life was noticed. And there was the message, really quite profound. As much as we sometimes dread the challenges that come to us when life takes one of those often unexpected and sometimes shocking detours into the storm, it is surely only in the midst of that experience that we have our vision sensitised to the beauty and reality of God's provision and blessing. At around the same time he shares thoughts, I, Robin Mark, had been musing about the phrase lost and found. We as a family had been looking to buy a kitten, and each night we would scour the pets corner column of the local newspaper for any suitable moggies for sale. The small ads column in the newspaper are listed alphabetically, and just before the P for pets comes L for lost and found. Lost and found is the heading of the column that lists adverts inserted by people detailing items that have been accidentally misplaced and that they hope someone will find and return. Often the things they seek are in themselves not that special, valuable or attractive to anyone else, but absolutely precious to the one who really owned it. You know the sort of thing, lost one small terrier. A small terrier dog, black and white with only one eye, damaged ear and missing tail due to accidents, answers to the name of Lucky. Anyway, that little story was what inspired Robin Mark to sing, to compose our next song, which is called Lost and Found.
When the rain falls, the sky is on the edge.
world out there that's lost, that's waiting to be found. Go to it, friends.